This is Making Connections. I'm Barb Seaman. I'm always curious about what shapes people and why they do what they do. I notice that listening to people tell their stories helps us understand the world better. And if we know where they're coming from, it's a little easier to figure out how to deal with each other when problems pop up. Since religion seems to be one of the subjects that often causes problems between people, I was delighted to have a conversation with Joanne Boswell. Boswell, who's now a Quaker, spoke frankly about her experience growing up in the Evangelical Church. She's just published a book of poetry and photography called Cosmic Pockets. Many of her poems share a glimpse at how her views have evolved over the years.
It's really fun. I get both praise and criticism because of how personal it is. A lot of different streams of poets would say, you know, don't be overly personal. And then other people really find that brave and wonderful. So it's kind of part coffee table book, part memoir, part poetry.
Interesting, because I've always heard that for people who want to write, you're going to write better if you're writing about things that you know well.
Yeah, that's what I think. And that's what I do. And I kind of write almost as personal therapy for myself too. I've never been able to afford therapy, but if something is sticking in my mind, then I'll try and write about it. And it really helps me kind of process the moment. And that's what's in this book. And there's a lot of humor in it too. And a lot of, I love science fiction. And I actually feel like I learned a lot from Jean-Luc Picard and Star Trek about accepting other cultures. And so there's some sci-fi in here and humor and a lot about motherhood and about marriage, as well as the stuff about faith and feminism.
How would you like to read a poem from your book?
I would love to. I'll read a poem that talks a little bit about growing up in the church. It's called Clutched. My brother was a demon. Each night, crowds flocked, ushering neighbors, coworkers, skeptics surrounded, fabric flames wavering near fans, lights down, leaving only eerie glowing eyes lit by exit signs. 90 minutes blur together, scenes of debauchery, revelry, fun, minute decisions determine eternity, heaven's gates or hell's flames. Depicted caricatures exaggerate, bolster the self-righteous, damn the doubtful, terrorize tag-along children. As I ponder that line, barely tracing the edge of religion, bordering something more sinister, nostalgia turns sour, remembering buried hours, couched in Sunday smiles, lay cult-like obsession with apocalypse, scare tactics twisting young minds, tension building every second, watching retro 70s Left Behind films filled with guillotines, white robes, embedded ships, blood rain, hiding, running, screaming, blood, disappearing, betrayal, denial, blood, night terrors shown boldly, repeatedly, while our parents sat sermonized 7 rooms away. Gripped in the narrative, the end is nigh, I became jumpy, pyrophobic, afraid to sleep. I strategized, prioritized, prayed. Did I do the magic that time? Did I believe enough? Am I safe? Again, how many times? Harder this time, longer, truer. Traumatized, tear-stained, agonizing. Will I be left behind? Will I abandon others? What does that even mean? If I care so much for them, shouldn't I convert, evangelize, at least invite them to the play?
So, as somebody who's not really into reading very much poetry, is it uncouth for me to ask you to explain that poem?
No, not at all. I love it. Poetry is, as I tell everyone, poetry is super subjective. And yeah, you know, I like to build a puzzle and a mystery, and let the reader do a little bit of work, but I love to explain too. You know, it starts out, my brother was a demon. So there was, our church hosted a traveling production called Heaven's Gates or Hell's Flames, which would go around from town to town to try and convert people. And, they would cast some church members in some of the minor roles. And so my little brother and I had a foster brother at the time, both of them were cast as demons. So I like to laugh about this too, because my brother is actually now, an atheist. So it's kind of a little tongue in cheek. But this is about that play and, kind of how terrifying it was. And then remembering also that the children's pastor at my church was really kind of obsessed with these Left Behind movies. And if you've, you know, Kirk Cameron has done a series of movies called Left Behind. And there's movies, those are remakes of movies from the 70s that I grew up. I don't even know how many times I watched them during church while my parents are in the main room. And I told my mom about this recently before the book came out. She had no idea that this was something that was in my mind all the time.
So you're watching movies that are, and the point of it is to teach little kids not to be left behind. Is that
right? Like the idea of, the rapture, Revelation, which is the last book in the Bible, talks about basically this horrifying time on earth, the apocalypse, when everything is end and only the redeemed and the saved go to be with God. And there's different theories. And we spent so much time talking about, will we be raptured pre-tribulation or mid-tribulation or post-tribulation? And they would
debate. What does that mean?
Well, the tribulation would be the blood rain and the Antichrist and people getting chips embedded in their head that say 666. And if you don't do that, then you get guillotined. And are the faithful going to have to live through that time? And I would just pray and pray and pray that we would be raptured pre-trib. And rapture is, of course, when you're basically beamed out of earth before the horrible things happen to the, quote, horrible people who didn't believe in Jesus, and the specifically the type of Jesus teaching, that, because there's lots of different Jesus teachings. Turns out
we don't have that much time.
We don't have that much time. So anyways, I was really terrified. And I've heard this from other, specifically females who grew up in this culture, less so from males. So I don't know what that is specifically, but I was really terrified that I would end up going to hell and that I hadn't believed correctly, that I hadn't said the prayer, the salvation prayer. So I would pray the salvation prayer over and over again, hoping that I would get it right. And I was also just really terrified of all fire. I wouldn't go tour the fire station with the field trip. My mom would get me excused because I was terrified. And I think it was this correlation to all of the hell teaching.
Mm-hmm. Could you describe the church? What kind of church was it that you guys went to? Was there a certain denomination or?
Yeah, I grew up Foursquare, which Foursquare is in the charismatic persuasion of churches. Foursquare Church was actually started by a woman. I can't remember the time. Her name is Amy Simple McPherson. So it's a church that does believe in women in leadership, if that tells you anything about the church. And they focus a lot on the Holy Spirit and kind of tend to have big bands and music bands doing the worship music and with lights and...
Are those the, what I think of as like these big giant churches where they have like thousands of people coming together?
Yeah, there's a couple of different, there's a lot of different mega churches, but Foursquare certainly has a lot of them, as does Assemblies of God is even more on the charismatic side. So if you've heard of Bethel in California, that's even more charismatic, but certainly in the similar vein. And I was in Roseburg, which is a small town. And I always thought of my church as a mega church, but really it was probably 300 members. But that's a really big church for a town of 20,000 people.
Mm-hmm. I've not heard the term charismatic before. Can you tell me a little bit about
that?
Oh,
yeah. Charismatic is, just like if you think of a charismatic person who is outgoing and maybe even gregarious, they tend to be evangelists. So people who are going to maybe talk to you and try and convert you. I hesitate to use the word loud because it's not like every person who attends a Foursquare church is loud, but that's probably what sense you would get if you're unfamiliar with churches. They're certainly bolder, maybe.
Tell me if I'm wrong here. I always think of evangelist as being like the main goal is to go out and try to convert everybody to thinking like you do.
Yes. Yeah. They would use the term good news. Like we want to, I think a lot of evangelistic people, it's from the outside, it really looks gross. Like marketing for this one type of belief that everyone has to believe. The way I was taught it was more that we have this secret, this truth, and other people will suffer if they don't get this truth. So because we love other people, we need to help them see this same truth so that they can be saved, so that they don't go to hell. So that's not what I believe, but that's what I grew up with.
Yeah. And I find it so interesting because I've known people that are like that. And so maybe to them, it feels like they have this secret and they're doing me a favor by trying to let me in on it. But to me, it always just felt like they're just being pushy and annoying.
Right.
Exactly. And judgmental.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I was never very good at it because I think I felt that. It felt intrusive. It felt wrong. But I was pulled because I was also hearing, I didn't want anyone to burn in hell, and it just was this horrifying thought. And so a lot of people do that out of love, but it certainly doesn't feel like love to the people on the other side.
You're listening to Making Connections on KXRW Vancouver. I'm speaking with Joanne Boswell.
She was walking in the garden one day when a snake slipped around her feet. Follow me right over to this tree and I'll give you something good to eat. Why no? Are you sure? I don't think it is right. It doesn't matter, just open your mouth. Tasty bite. Said to him, I think it's in mud. Boy, does it look right. Said to her, just take my word and I promise that I see the lie. Why don't you skiddly in? Cause I don't want to see your face around here no more. Why don't you skiddly do? Cause this is now and now before. Cause you all the devil and the devil is bad. Hey. You all the devil and the devil is bad. Hey. You all the devil and the devil is bad. Hey. You all the devil and you are bad.
We'll continue our conversation and hear another one of Joanne's poems after this quick break to thank our KXRW sponsors.
KXRW would like to thank New Vansterdam for their ongoing support of community radio. New Vansterdam is Vancouver's premier cannabis market. Visit newvansterdam.com to view and order from their full online menu. And they offer in-store, curbside, and touchless pickup to better serve you. New Vansterdam is located in the Height Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information at newvansterdam.com.
Big thank you to our friends at Boomerang Therapy Works and home of the KXRW Studios.
Boomerang is the only physical therapy facility in Vancouver and Portland that specializes in the treatment of neuromuscular disorders and brain injuries like Parkinson's, MS, and stroke. They opened Boomerang to bring premier treatment to their patients. Find Boomerang Therapy Works in action on Instagram or Facebook and see how their patients are inspired in their recovery. They can be reached at 360-258-1637. That's 360-258-1637. This is Making Connections. I'm Barb Seaman, talking to Joanne Boswell, who lives in Camas, Washington. She's published a book called Cosmic Pockets. It's a fat book full of poetry and photographs, a very personal reflection.
My book, my poetry, my thinking is not the authority on anything. It's just my experience and my journey, and I don't feel like my journey is done. So I published it even thinking, I wonder how much of this I'm going to feel differently about in the future.
Many of the poems are inspired by Joanne's experience growing up in a very conservative Christian family. I asked about her worldview growing up in that environment.
You know, I was really pretty sheltered just by nature of, you know, we went to the school my dad taught at, and so it was a small Christian school. My graduating class was 28, and, you know, Roseburg, Oregon, which is not a diverse town. But my parents were also really taught us to be critical thinkers and really judge what was told to us. So I found that I was applying that even at a younger age, even to the church, and some of the teachings, and, you know, just like any religion, not everybody is the same. And so there were some teachers that were maybe worse than others, and what I would say worse. And I started to kind of question some things, which I didn't verbalize. I kind of kept them inside. But I didn't have a lot of exposure to people who were outside of Christianity, and I was probably a little afraid of them. There was a lot of focus, too, on the New Testament teachings of Jesus, which are more about love and inclusion, and about being caring towards other people and being empathetic and trying to understand their stories. And I remember especially my dad was always trying to teach us to think about things from other people's perspective. And I think that really has benefited me as I've grown up.
I'm curious about, like, when did your outlook kind of start to change?
Yeah, I think I was involved a lot in theater starting in high school. My oldest sister, who's 10 years older than me, moved back home when I was in high school and became my high school English and theater teacher. So, you know, when you're in that world, you start to get too exposed to different people, who have different backgrounds and really have a colorful, beautiful life. And so I think just by being in that world a little bit more, and not that nobody was open or out or outspokenly gay in that part of my world. Although later on people have come out that I was involved in theater with, but I think, my spirit is sensitive enough that I was aware of these things. And when you get to know people, it changes from something on paper to something in your heart. And, in college, I started to kind of shift a little bit more to George Fox is a Quaker university, and 9/11 happened my first week of college. And I was very quickly immersed in this world of pacifism and anti-war, which is a Quaker. And there's a lot about George Fox that I don't love. They're a different kind of Quaker than I am in general. But the pacifism really resonated with me, and I'd always kind of felt that way inside, but never said it. And so that was kind of the beginning of change, of realizing there's different ways of being Christian. There's different ways of being moral than just this one narrow stream. And I started to kind of more critically think, well, if gay people aren't Christian, which is, again, is a horrible misunderstanding. There are definitely gay Christians. But at the time, I thought, why should we hold them to our laws? They should be able to get married. That doesn't make any sense to tell them they can't get married. They're, not everyone in America is Christian. And that, kind of was my, quote, slippery slope that started me moving to a place where eventually, after I got married and we'd moved to Berkeley, we both wanted to find a church to go that would have gay and trans people actually ordained and preaching every week. And so we did. We went to a church like two blocks from UC Berkeley. It was wonderful.
What about the whole idea of feminism? I mean, did you, like, when we were young, was your view of women way different than it's grown into today?
Well, and it's complicated. Like I mentioned, my church was founded by a woman. However, the only women in leadership were doing music and doing children's ministry. In my church, and in most of the churches that I went to, it was very rare to see a female pastor as the lead pastor. But yeah, I grew up hearing that feminism was evil, and getting pictures of like militant feminism, who are swearing and slapping people and like who want something better than men have and who don't want to play the role that God had assigned them. But at the same time, I think my parents were very equal in the way that they made decisions. My dad was not the one making all of the decisions in the family. My parents were very collaborative. So I was watching that too. But I certainly, when I was in college and some of my friends were getting married and keeping their last names, I thought, it felt weird to me. I didn't quite understand it. It was in a theater class in college where we were studying, like an advanced acting class. We were studying some different feminist playwrights. And the professor, who I just adore, he explained to us, by the way, feminism is not a dirty word. Feminism doesn't mean trying to be better than men. It means trying to be equal. And here are these things that have really suppressed women. And that's when it started to switch for me, but it's been a really slow process. And I find that I'll still uncover things and my own prejudices that are anti-female that I didn't know were there. So it's been a slow journey, but yes, there's a lot of that in my poetry book, a lot of me exploring feminism really for the first time.
Yeah. Would you like to read another poem?
Sure. This is called Descent, and I wrote this after watching the documentary called Descent about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which again, this was a name I grew up with hearing, like I had this gut reaction to her name as an evil person. Everything I heard about her, listening to Rush Limbaugh in the car on the way to school or whatever, was negative. And I'm slowly learning, oh, no, I love her. She's amazing. Mm-hmm. So this poem is dedicated to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Renee, who is my middle child. She was about 3 when I wrote this. Descent. How can I teach my children contentment when I am a gaping maw of desire, snapping into deep pout when I sniff unmistakable odors of bigotry, wind wafting paper mill stench upwind, throwing in my face votes for economy over morality, personal fears placated, prioritizing self over stranger safety? So they close the borders, zip it shut, and throw away the key. My eyes narrow, sliding oversized glasses down. Chin drops onto collar, defiantly yawn in response. Open wide, notorious black hole of acceptance, slurping legislative blockades, supremacists, and nationalism into crushing non-existence. Humanity first posture of consumption, determined to live in a world where equality is not a dirty word. I tell them, stop complaining, be grateful, share. Objects matter less than people, including sisters. My three-year-old advises me, I also know you have to roar every day. So this poem is, of course, about the way that she's fighting for justice, but also noticing, you know, when you have little kids who are discontent with everything and arguing about everything, and I'm trying to get them to stop fighting, but also recognizing that there is a good fight to be had too. There is a time to not be content and to fight. And the quote at the end, I also know you have to roar every day, is something my three-year-old legitimately said to me, just kind of in this babbling of nonsense. But it's become kind of my mantra.
So what are you teaching them? What is your hope for them for the future?
I think my hope is that, well, I mean, really, the things that my parents taught me, I hope that they think critically, and I hope that they learn to look from other people's perspectives, and that they are loving, but also that they fight injustice, and that they really fight for the marginalized people, and are able to decipher the difference between which causes are worth really, really fighting for.
Joanne Boswell, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me.
Thank you.
It's been really fun talking to you about all of this.
It's been great. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Joanne Boswell. If you'd like to read more of her poetry and explore her photographs, take a look at her new book, Cosmic Pockets, which is on Fernwood Press. This is Making Connections on KXRW. We're a listener-supported radio station in Vancouver and are so grateful to X-Ray FM for sharing their airtime with us. If you want to find out more, make a donation and support us, or just get involved, head over to our website, kxrw.fm. Thanks for tuning in.
The Community Angels at National Women's Coalition Against Violence and Exploitation have been supporters of KXRW Community Radio since the beginning. They have a dream, a world without violence. NWCAVE helps to inform and educate the prevention of violence against women and children. Learn more about how you can help at nwcave.org.